Right, it is 7:40 and time for our health and wellness feature for a Saturday morning. And this morning, talking about epilepsy. According to the Neurological Society of South Africa, epilepsy affects around one in every 100 people in South Africa. But the risk of premature death in people with epilepsy is up to 3 times higher than the general population. The causes are linked to SUDEP, or sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. Not just that, but access to neurological care is a major issue here, with just one neurologist to every 500,000 patients. That's an extraordinary number. Our expert this morning is NASA member Dr. Prakash Kathan. A very good morning to you, Doctor. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Sarah, and to the listeners of Cape Talk.
Would you please just start by explaining what epilepsy is and how it presents?
Epilepsy is diagnosed when a patient has two or more seizures, and it is basically the predisposition to seizures.
What causes it? It's obviously a neurological issue, but what is it?
So it has a variety of causes. It can be something that people are born with. It can also be something acquired because of head trauma, head injury. It can also happen to people with electrolyte disturbances, biochemical disturbances like sugar fluctuations in diabetics. So there's so many causes of it. And essentially what it's about is the brain tissue becomes excitable, and that excitability produces this abnormal discharge called a seizure.
So in terms of diagnosis, you say that two or more episodes, what is it quite easily diagnosed? I mean, is it something that, I mean, can those two episodes be years apart?
Yes, they can be years apart. And to answer your question about the difficulty, it can be difficult to diagnose it, but it can also be fairly straightforward and easy, as long as the patient goes to the medical professional for assistance.
Right. Has there been in the past a reluctance by patients following, and we can talk about access to neurologists in just a minute, but has there been a reluctance? Because historically there has been some stigma linked to the condition, right?
Yes, there is a lot of stigma, and also that stigma is based on ignorance about what epilepsy is, what it means, and what it means for the patient and their family.
If you're just joining us this morning, 7:43, we're talking to Dr. Prakash Kathan, who is a member of the Neurological Society of South Africa, talking to us this morning about epilepsy, specifically about something called SUDEP, or sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. It's said that there's the risk of premature death in people with epilepsy is up to 3 times higher than the general population. Why is that then? Just explain to us, if you would, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, and why it appears that over the last few years there's been an increase in those instances.
So I think the reason for the increase is also related to an increased amount of reporting of it and an understanding of it. Previously, people with epilepsy may have passed on from it, and it wasn't known, that they weren't known with epilepsy. But in terms of why it happened, it can be when a patient has a seizure at night, if the generalized tonic-clonic seizure, then they could stop breathing for a period of time, or they could aspirate like their saliva, or something else could get into their lungs, because they have no protection of their airway during that period of the seizure. So in that way, these things can happen. And also unintentional injury, if there's a lamp nearby, it could cause a fire. So these are the ways that it can happen.
So it's not necessarily that there has been more an increase, but rather that reporting on SUDEP has I guess, improved or has become more prevalent.
Yes, and reporting of epilepsy itself, as I think we mentioned the stigma, I think as time is going on, it is getting a bit less.
Let's talk about access to care, because that's really significant. The neurologist patient ratio in South Africa is extremely low. I mentioned in the introduction, one neurologist to every 500,000 patients. Now, if you compare that to the average in high income countries, where the ratio is sort of 35 to every half million. How does that, one to every half million, it is so low. How does that then impact on people's access to care and treatment?
It impacts greatly, because a neurologist will hear the patient or their family's description of these abnormal, strange events and immediately understand what it is and what to do. So it goes two ways. Sometimes there's an overdiagnosis of epilepsy in some medical professionals who do not have that expertise, and it also goes the other way, as sometimes where epilepsy or seizures should be suspected, it is overlooked as something like fainting or syncope.
Let's talk about treatment or management of epilepsy. What are the most common types of treatment? And again, what's the availability or access like for those treatments? Because I gather that 70% of people with epilepsy could live seizure-free if they had access to the appropriate anti-seizure treatment.
That's right. So anti-seizure treatment or anti-epileptic medication is the main treatment for epilepsy. And there's various different types of medication. With all of the medications aim to reduce that excitability we talked about earlier. And by reducing that excitability, it reduces the likelihood a patient may have a seizure. That treatment needs to be prescribed by a doctor. And sometimes certain doctors would wait or a neurologist or physician or a doctor with that expertise in epilepsy before prescribing, and also for investigation. And as we mentioned earlier, because there's not many doctors around like that, it can take quite some time for a patient with epilepsy to see such a doctor, and that delay can cause a worsening in their epilepsy.
When we look at there might be somebody who's just tuned into the show, Dr. Callahan, and who has perhaps just been diagnosed. And we've been talking about SUDEP, the sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. And that might be quite a frightening thing to hear, and to hear that numbers appear to have increased, although you say it's more to do with reporting around epilepsy. What does the prognosis currently look like for somebody perhaps who's just been diagnosed in South Africa with epilepsy?
I think that the diagnosis is a good sign. If someone is diagnosed with epilepsy and they have epilepsy, then there is obviously, as you mentioned, a good response to treatment in most patients. Therefore, their likelihood of having SUDEP or sudden unexpected death in epilepsy goes down remarkably, as opposed to if they're not on treatment and have not been diagnosed with epilepsy.
In terms of government spend, Doctor, on neurological health, how do we fare compared to other countries?
I think that our government does not spend enough in terms of neurological disorders and epilepsy compared to the rest of the world in general, especially the first world countries.
And is that something that the Neurological Society of South Africa is pressurizing government to change?
Yes, so we are. We're trying to get more from the government We have neurologists in all the universities and major academic public hospitals, and it's often a task to get more money and facility medications for our patients.
Question in on the WhatsApp line. Morning, SJ. What are the effects if a person who's been diagnosed with epilepsy doesn't take their chronic meds?
Doctor? So their likelihood of seizures would then increase. Patients in general should not miss their medication. When they miss it, it's called non-compliance. And if they want to stop it, or they want to reduce, or they want to look at their medication, then they should do it with their doctor or neurologist.
What might be some of the reasons why a patient wouldn't take their medication, Doctor?
Often it's to do with compliance. I mean, it's often to do with convenience, but sometimes certain side effects with the medications can make it disagreeable for the patient, so that's why they don't take it. But like I said, if that is part of where they're coming from, then they should just approach their doctor and explain to them what they're feeling, and then the doctor can put it in perspective as the risk and the benefits sometimes, and also how to do it from the doctor's perspective will be different from a patient's perspective, who would just often just stop their medication and then increase their risk for seizures.
Another question coming in on the WhatsApp line. Thank you for that. What is myoclonic epilepsy? I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Myoclonic epilepsy is simply explaining the type of seizures that that type of epilepsy has. So there can be different types. There can be the most common, which we see, is a juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, which happens often in the adolescent years. And it just describes a seizure type, which is brief jerk-like seizures and sometimes jerk-like movements. And then you get also other more dangerous types of epilepsy, progressive myoclonic epilepsies, and those can be like parts of genetic disorders and can worsen with time.
In terms of people experiencing epileptic seizures as teenagers, does that then suggest that it's something that they grow out of as they get older?
So in children, people often do grow out of epilepsy, but by the time that they're adolescents or teenagers, it's less likely that that will happen, and there should be a greater vigilance. Also, often the teenage years is the time where some people are still seeing pediatricians, and then there should be a communication between the pediatrician or the pediatric neurologist and then the adult neurologist who may take over treatment.
Would it be the case, Doctor, that if somebody does have a seizure, I mean, first of all, obviously, because people have seizures all the time, don't they? I mean, and it doesn't automatically mean that it's epilepsy. Your first point of call after having had a seizure, or a child having a seizure, or a friend or relative, is obviously to seek medical assistance. Would there automatically be a test or a screening for epilepsy following an event like that?
Yes. So after one seizure, one is not diagnosed with epilepsy, but an investigation should happen as to why that seizure occurred. And that requires blood investigation. It requires a brain scan and an EEG. And then if that EEG shows abnormalities that could indicate epilepsy, then a diagnosis of epilepsy can be made. But if, for example, someone's never had a seizure and for some or other reason they do an EEG and it's abnormal, then you cannot make that diagnosis. So as I said, at first, two seizures or more equal or can diagnose epilepsy. Another part of that is one seizure and an abnormal EEG can also diagnose. But in general, the other tests are also important as to go to cause in case something is found in the brain that could also give another reason as to why someone had a seizure.
Before we let you go, Doctor, I think it might be useful just for our listeners to maybe get some advice if for any type of seizure. If you witness somebody having a seizure, what's the best thing to do?
So the best thing to do is to not do too much. Some people want to put something in the patient's mouth for the generalized tonic-clonic seizure, but that could cause harm to their teeth. It could cause a risk of aspiration or the items going into their lungs and could be dangerous. If it's possible, you could move them onto their side so that it decreases the risk of aspiration, and just to wait for it to stop. If it lasts more than 5 minutes, then they should contact their doctor or ambulance because it shouldn't be lasting so long.
It's been great to have you on this morning. Thanks so much, Doctor. Really appreciate your time this morning. Dr. Prakash Kathan speaking to us about epilepsy this morning. He's a member of the Neurological Society of South Africa.